What's up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is August 14th, 2018. And before we even get started today, a couple of things. First is I want to remind you that I do recommend a 2-drink minimum for this podcast for ease of listening purposes. Second thing is that I am not an investment advisor. I hold no licenses. This is not financial advice, etc., etc. Please read my full disclaimer underneath my podcast on my website and pretty much everywhere. Basically, I was serving beer for a living 8 years ago, and that's the only thing you need to know. Nothing here should be construed as investment advice. Third, I want to thank my Patreons for making this podcast possible and keeping it ad-free. If you don't know what Patreon is, it is a recurring donation service that allows you to donate any sum you would like, very, very small to very, very large, to the podcast to keep me up and running and help with expenses. Some of my newest Patreons: C. Neil, Brent James, Mick Dosti, Nick Zizis, Chris Boas, Zach Jones, Colin Hoodspith, Chris Bede, Elon Musk is the guy's name, Walter Boldhouse, Marshall New, Jorge Perlas, Jason Bernstein. I appreciate you guys very much, and I appreciate you guys being patrons, and also some of my older patrons, guys like Jerry Baker, Michael Samuels, Aiden Archer. Haven't forgotten about all you guys that signed up a while back, and even guys like Max Mulvihill and Franz and Michael Embley, who have been with me for a little while. I appreciate you guys very much. Okay, with that being said, we're going to get right to it today. I have with me today on the line, I think live from Alder Lane Farm, but he can correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Mark Cahotas. Mark Cahotas is, of course, a very well-known short seller who predicted the demise of companies like Concordia. He was involved with Home Capital. He's certainly gotten a fair amount of press coverage lately with his involvement in MiMedx, which looks like things got a little bit rockier there today. Perhaps Mark will talk to us about that. And, of course, really, what Mr. Cahotas is famed for lately is his call on Overstock, which had some good news recently, supposedly, but then saw its stock get absolutely shit-hammered, shellacked over the last 2 days, which I'm sure Mr. Cahotas would love to talk about. And I have a lot of questions for him. So without further ado, what's going on, Mark? How are you?
First of all, Chris, thanks for having me on again. I enjoyed it the last time, and everyone keeps tweeting me about Overstock, so I figured this is a perfect venue to let it all hang out. I think the last time we talked about it, it was 33 on its way to, I think it got to 48-ish on Friday, and now we're back at 33. So life in the big city. You went on if you went on vacation for 5 weeks and left and came back, the thing's done nothing. So.
Yeah, and Jesus, I have a million questions for you. So I guess if you haven't listened to the first podcast with Mark of mine, go ahead.
Did you have- there's a couple things I was thinking of this today. I was thinking about my relationship with Burn. You know, I've been doing this since 1982, Chris. And David Rocker and I started in 85. So something that reminds me of Overstock very much is a company called Datascope. And we were along a boatload of it. It was a bombed out medical device company in the late 80s. And we were buying it. And the great Michael Steinhardt, and he is a legend. That guy is a classic and a smart, mean, nasty motherfucker. He was shorting it to us. And the stock was around 30. And bad stories would come out disseminated from his shop, and the stock would go in the low 20s. And we'd buy it and then go back up to 30. And then bad stories would come out, go in the low 20s, and we'd buy even more. And then go back up to 30. And then they sort of reached out to us one day because David Rocker used to work with Steinhardt and said, like, why are you guys buying this thing? And I said, well, they have a whole black box collagen division and they're working on stuff. I don't know exactly what it is, but if it hits, it's going to turn into a big stock. And they said, nah, you know, they kept spreading stories. The CEO was going to leave. Products were going to get recalled, all sorts of bullshit, just exactly what's going on with Overstock. So one day they announced out of the blue a product called VasoSeal, which when you have an angiogram or angioplasty, knock on wood, I've never had either one of those, they put this plug in your groin instead of, and it stops the bleeding instead of sandbags or whatever people used to use. And the stock literally went from 30 to, I think, 130 in about 3 weeks, maybe four. And those guys got absolutely fucking destroyed. And I remember selling our stock to them, not at the top, but pretty close to it, at the end of 1 year. And I'm still tight with a guy named who he was at the Feshbacks at the time, and he was long Datascope with us. And whenever I see him, we reminisce Datascope. And Overstock sort of reminds me of a cross between a Datascope and a Canandaigua wine. And we were along Canandaigua wine when they got the shit knocked out of them on wine cooler. And Wall Street and everyone thought Richard Sands, who's now the chairman of it, was a complete idiot, because his idea was wine was a flop. And when the stock got killed, no one would touch Richard Sands. But I would touch Richard Sands because I thought he was a genius. And I also think Patrick Byrne is a genius. And I think the guy who ran Datascope, Larry Saper, I think his name was, is a genius. So the one thing about me is, if you're my friend and you double cross me, not only are you dead, I would just as soon destroy you.
Well, that sounds like a threat.
No, that's not a threat. This is where
that sounds like a threat.
Okay, well, let me take that back. It's not a threat, but I don't like being double-crossed. But if I'm your enemy, like I was with Byrne, and you shake hands and come to a peaceful accord, I'm willing to then be your friend and respect you because I know what it was like in battle, right?
Okay.
So it's this double-cross aspect of it, combined with someone who I have fought with in the past, who I now respect and admire, which is what makes Overstock partly intriguing to me today. Because I think the upside in the stock, where is it, 30, 33, I think it's theoretically a 10-bagger or higher. And the recent news, I mean, when we first had our podcast, they announced that GSR was interested to the tune of 100 on the STO. Well, instead of doing 160 in the STO, they're going to do 30 or some number in the STO, 100 in stock, and the balance in percent of T0, valuing it at $1.5 billion. So right now, with the stock at 33, the whole package is worth $900 million. So clearly, Wall Street puts the chance of this happening at a number slightly less than zero.
Right. And that's going to be my first question for you. You know, the first question I have for you is the one that we have been seeing all over the place, that I've been seeing all over the place. And that is, look, GSR just balked on this Nissan deal 2 months ago. And I know that that's being tossed around. And look, I'll tell you, man, I went on GSR's website. They're a China-based firm. There's a lot of people asking a lot of weird questions. You know, do they have the money? Are they serious investors? How do we know that they're serious? You know, the people have been trying to get in touch with them, and they've been claiming that they haven't been able to get in touch with them. And, you know, coming out of China automatically, at least to me, diminishes your credibility on the U.S. markets by 50%. I mean, so, and that's as somebody that has a lot of experience dealing with U.S. listed China-based companies. So what do you say to a critic that says something like that?
Well, let's unpackage that. First of all, yesterday I had to start muting and blocking people because I kept getting so many goddamn tweets about guys. You know, look, I short stocks. I've been doing so since 1979. So I'm familiar with every single trick in the book. I've seen them. I don't use them, but I'm familiar with them. But tweeting at me that, Jesus, look at GSR. They just balked and you know, didn't have enough money for the Nissan deal. Let me tell you something. When I check it, when I check GSR and Nissan, it was Nissan who fucked the Nissan GSR deal, not GSR. Don't believe everything you read, ladies and gentlemen. It was Nissan who played the game, who trick fucked GSR, not the other way around. And Nissan then goes to the media, and it's very simple to say, GSR didn't have the money. That's why the deal fell
through. So what's your source on that? How can you back that up to somebody who's a critic?
You know what? I bust my ass. And I do people the favor of following me on Twitter because I help people out, and I've made people a shit pot full of money by following me. And I don't charge anything for it, and I do it for fun and for kicks and try to help people out. I help people out. I'm not giving people my sources on that, but this concept that GSR didn't have the money to close the Nissan deal is bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. And I'm tired of hearing it. I'm tired of listening to it. If you want a short overstock based on the GSR Nissan story, knock yourself out. Knock yourself out. I think it's absolute crap. That's the first thing with GSR. Two, why in the world would GSR pick up the phone or return a call to any fly face asking them about overstock? They are serious people. They have pride. They clearly believe in their business, and they know exactly what's being talked about them. They know exactly the score. They know Nissan says they don't have the money to close the battery deal. They can read, but at the end of the day, they originally wanted $160 million of overstock through the STO. And 5 weeks later, the number is 404. So the number didn't go from 160 to 20. The number has gone from 160 to 404. And when it was announced, and it wasn't leaked because overstock stock has acted like shit forever, right? It's not like the stock was moving up in front of it. It was just sitting there, right? Everyone loved the deal. The stock was trading up 20-some-odd%. And then lo and behold, somebody, you know, and again, my hat's off to you, whoever you are. I think you're on an unethical, manipulative piece of shit. But someone bought 20,000 of the 30 puts. And then every story known to man came out of the woodwork. And now the stock's 33.
Well, what else came out of the woodwork aside from the Nissan story?
Let's see, GSR doesn't have the money. There's a story about the company is actively selling the stock in a shelf offering that they're an at-the-market or whatever deal. I mean, people think that overstock is selling the stock and raising money and pounding the stock out with this GSR deal, which is absolute bullshit. But people run with it. There is a
shelf in place, right?
Right, but see, the thing is I've had people read me the language probably 30 times because I figure I'm too old and I'm not reading it right. So I have people read me the things, and it's may, shall, could, can, would, 3 years, things like that, conditional language. And if you look back at overstock one way or the other, at least since I've been involved in the thing since 2002, they've had various shelves in place from time to time. Not that they use it, but you have it in place. So when the stock goes down, I get way too many emails, texts, pings. The company's selling stock. It's the company selling stock. Why are they selling it? I mean, even Davidson, who is a bull, the poor guy Forte, he's confused. He said the company is going to raise $254 million in a note today, which he's completely wrong, but that's his business to be wrong. They're not raising that money. They have a shelf. And when people read it carefully, it's not that much. And it's a 2 to 3 year time frame.
So what do you say to somebody that says, oh, well, they tucked the shelf in with all this other fucking news and they haven't talked about it on the call and they didn't talk about it, you know, at any point when they made this release, they kind of just snuck it in there.
You know what I say to that person? That's what they think of the news. They think the news is so insignificant and so doesn't matter. Why would you give it any time? Why with this breakthrough thing that they announced, why would you remotely give a shelf that you have no intention of activating here? Because if the GSR deal goes through, they're going to be flush with cash. They're going to have plenty of cash, not to mention the retail sale. So you've had, again, hats off to the crowd that has that short the thing, that has everyone spooked. Well done. Well played. God bless you. I've been long the stock more than a year. I love it. I think it's going way the hell up, way the hell up. I mentioned it at Grants last October at 30. It went to 90, and now it's 33. And it's been all over the place, and it's not for the faint of heart. And I don't tell grown-ups what to do. I don't tell kids what to do. I can't even tell my dogs what to do. But I like it, and I have my own money involved in it. I don't manage other people's money, and I like it, and I like it a lot. And I like Burn a lot. I mean, I think the guy, he is not for everyone. He is beyond a genius. He's probably the smartest person I've ever known. He's matured quite a bit, but people don't give him the benefit of the doubt because of legacy behavior. You know, it's just amazing how people forgive some people and forget a whole bunch of stuff, but they don't. They never let it. Some people just never let it go with Patrick, which is a shame. So close to home, you know, I've had a very, very, very bad year in terms of friends dying from cancer. And I said goodbye to a friend the other day with pancreatic cancer, which is a bad deal. But Burns a cancer survivor, and those cancer survivors are just tough, tough, tough motherfuckers. And the guy has my respect, and he's built this thing, and he's had the vision to build it. And I think, you know, the T0 deal goes through at the terms. The stock, the first trade in the stock would be somewhere between 60 and 80 because no one believes it. And if, God forbid, they sell retail for what I think they're going to sell it for, and I think it's going to happen, that's going to add somewhere between $1 billion and $2 billion to the whole stack. And then I think you have a $100 stock with 30 million shares outstanding. So that's $3 billion. And it's very easy to get there. Then people say, well, how do you get to such a big number? Well, Davidson thinks it's worth 355. And that's when you start doing other STOs, you know, behind the T0 STO they did. And by the way, on the overstock STO, I put in for it and got some, and my son put in and got some. And it was the most difficult. I'd rather have a root canal than try to put in for an STO. It was so hard to do. But I think T0 is going to surprise a lot of people. And when Burn says it's a worldwide brand, it is. And I don't think GSR is going on a fishing expedition investing their money in T0 for some, oh, the other story was pump and dump. GSR doesn't own the stock to watch it pop to dump it. They don't even own the stock. Then someone says to me, well, what if GSR is doing this to pop the stock to short the stock? And then I said, you think they want to go to jail or lose whatever reputation they have? And he says, well, they're Chinese. I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, cut the crap already. I mean, the skeptics in overstock invent things. They tried to say that the shareholder class action lawsuit was going to cost them $350 million. That gets thrown out. Some people made a big deal about the SEC investigation into the STO or ICO or whatever it is. That's going to be dismissed too because they just did it. So I'm comfortable with it. I would rather see stocks I own go up, not down. I'd rather see things I'm short go down, not up. I'm a patient man. I've had an awful lot of wins in my life, big ones. I've had an awful lot of losses in my life, big ones. I've struck out an awful lot of people, and I've given up a lot of home runs. But that's what happens when you're 58 and you've been doing this since you're 21. but I don't sit at home, right, eat Cheetos, play on my computer, bashing me, watching porn, and doing all sorts of horseshit like some of these haters out there.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, because I'm trying to play devil's advocate here for the benefit of people that are listening, and because you know I've been called as somebody who worships Mark Cahotas as if I'm not capable of making my own decisions and doing my own research. I mean, I don't fucking worship anybody. I worship my mother and my father. That's about it. So let me ask you this, okay? What do you say to somebody who says the following things? One, that Byrne couldn't keep a set of clean books in the past. Two, that he's, you know, a pathological liar. And three, brings up the fact that, you know, you said as recent as 2013, you know, something like all he does is lie, Byrne.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think I said that in 2013 or was out of context in something. First of all, on that, I own my narrative and I admit when I'm wrong, and I congratulate others when they're right and I'm wrong. Just like, you know, Sandler was long a bunch of Joseph Banks and I thought it was a fraud and the thing was taken over by Men's Warehouse. I lost my fucking ass in it. But you know what? I congratulated him. I said, you know, you're smarter than me. You're right. I'm wrong. What did I do? Banged into the Men's Warehouse and made back what I lost in Joseph Banks' Men's Warehouse, and it turned out that Joseph Banks was a fraud, right? Byrne did all sorts of stuff back in the day. Did he say some shit he regrets? Absolutely. Absolutely. Did he do some stuff to me that he regrets? Absolutely. Did some of his guys and his close compatriots, like this Bob O'Brien guy, threaten to kill my son? Absolutely. Right? But Byrne and I made it right. And Byrne and I are good. And Byrne apologized to me, and I apologized to Byrne. So I respect that in him. I admire him. The clean set of books stuff is just a bunch of absolute bullshit. Take Two didn't have a clean set of books, and the government suspended trading in the stock when it was 4. And now it's 130, so that doesn't matter. And the accusations are coming from someone who's a convicted felon and who used to run with Barry Minko and is lucky he's not back in jail with Barry Minko. I mean, so part of it is you have to consider the source, people's viability of life, what some do and what don't do for a living. And the thing with Byrne, when you get to know him, he's socially awkward. He's somewhere on the scale, but he really does care and he really does try. And when he was suing us and we were suing him, and I'm going to get a little into some details of that in a minute. It came to my attention that Byrne had someone who worked with him who was very, very, very sick. Very sick. And that person needed an experimental treatment to save their lives. And it was something to the tune of $2 to $3 million. And he paid for it out of his pocket. And he never said anything about it, ever. And I said, you know, I know you did this. You know, how come you never said anything? He said, my mom taught me that if I'm going to do something good or charitable for someone, I shouldn't say it. I should just do it because it's the right thing to do and not draw attention to myself. So that's the kind of guy he is. And the people who work for him would stand in front of a bus or take a bus hit for him. And I really like and respect that. And back when all that bullshit was going on, you know, and the Sith Lord and all this other stuff, you know, the same jackals and lowlifes who give me a hard time were giving him a hard time too. And sometimes, you know, I just ignore them, right, because they're not worth my time. But if you don't know better as a CEO and you start getting attacked, sometimes you attack back. And as a CEO, it's a bad mistake. And he'll say it's a mistake now. But, you know, there were some bad things that were done to him by the same crowd who's at it today. And the skeptics today who were the skeptics of Byrne back in the day, those guys used to take dictation from the shorts. They can't come up with their own ideas themselves. They can't even really match themselves. So these guys operate for people who share a common goal of hate or dislike or something. And it's just the same old message. So other than being long Patrick Byrne, which I'm long because I'm long of stock and I admire him, you know, I want to see this guy win. I really do. I want to see him win. I want to see him get the due he deserves. Now, in saying that, I've said to him many times he'd be much better off as a chairman than a CEO because he doesn't suffer fools gladly, nor do I. And, you know, if he were to ever bump himself up to chairman and bring in a Wall Street friendly CEO, the stock would open somewhere between 50 and 70% higher because that completely takes the bat out of the shorts' hands. And people would then realize what this company has. So I submit the reason the stock's 33 and not 73 right now is because of Byrne. But the reason the stock could also go to 300 will be because of Byrne. So I'm a patient man. You know, this past week has been crazy. I think the stock started at 36, went to 48, now it's 33. And, you know, I think by the end of the year, we'll see. But
so
I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, I don't know what to say.
So you think the precipitous drop in the stock's price over the last 2 days since this deal has gotten done is nothing more than fear mongering, or do you think there's something involving this deal that, you know, like somebody suggested to me today, oh, there's going to be some kind of death spiral if the stock goes under, you know, where GSR's option is
Well, here we go again. Death spiral. Okay. There's no setup in this thing to create a death spiral, right? So let's just say this, okay? And I don't know any material non-public information. I think I have spent an inordinate amount of time figuring this out. There are people other than GSR interested in this asset. There are numerous people interested in this asset. So something.
Well, what do you base that on? What do you base that on?
Again, Chris, I'm a guy, right? Because of my medics, I wake up at 3 a.m. and I don't fucking stop. Okay, it is nonstop. And if you don't believe me, there's a Twitter guy from Israel, Rabbi E. Summer. He was out to visit me, came from Israel to see me last Tuesday or Wednesday. And he asked my wife and son, he says, is it always like this here? And they said, always. This is what I do. I dig, right? I ask questions. I call people. I find out things. One lead leads to another, to another, to another. But there are people other than GSR interested in T0. For sure. For sure. First of all, Coinbase is capped, depending on what you read, between 8 and 18 billion. Wayfair, right, on the retail side is 11 billion. How much do you think Wayfair has made or lost over the last 4 years, cumulatively?
Oh, they've lost a shitload.
Well, give me a number.
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know that they've posted, I think, nothing but losses.
Wayfair over the last 4 years, including this year, has lost north of $1 billion. North of $1 billion. Now, the skeptics in Overstock, they must think their retail business is worth zero. Overstock doesn't run those kind of losses, nowhere even remotely close, right? So just think, if someone wanted to be in that business, and people do, right? The question is what they're willing to pay. Just if you're willing to pay overstock, what Wayfair's cumulative losses have been in the last 4 years, that gets you to $1 billion. And again, there's 30 million shares. So that's 33. T0, $1.5 billion divided by 30, that's 50. So that's 80 plus cash, right? That's well north of 100. And that's before you even get into the Medici stuff or where these businesses can operate. And that's before you get into Medici. And it wouldn't surprise me that they'll start doing STOs in some of the Medici properties, you know, the real estate title stuff. They have a voting, they have a lot of neat stuff, and they're not all going to work. But again, I love the optionality, or the putting the pucks on the blue line, shooting them at the goalie in warmups. And again, everyone was all excited about the GSR stuff till, you know, someone figured out we better do something to create a story or this overstock's going to get out of hand. So I don't know.
So that's what you attribute the fall in the stock price to. You just think it's a volatile stock and there's just a loss of confidence, you know, due to a huge put buy and people kind of floating around rumors and nobody really knowing what the fuck's going on?
Well, first of all, Chris, you and I go back, right?
That's right.
And you and I like you, right? And I respect you. And I always tell it to you straight up.
Sure.
You called me one day and said, a close friend of yours has a friend who works at T0, blah, 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 whatever. And there were a bunch of black cars in front of T0. You know, someone thinks they've been raided.
Right.
I said, there's just not a chance, right? This is a name that attracts lowlifes, just complete lowlifes who make shit up to play with the stock. Now, that's fine, okay? It's not my cup of tea, but if that's how guys roll, I can't tell people how to behave. I have a sneaking suspicion, right, through some stuff that's been sent to me via email, that there was some foul play with this overstock, and I think some people are going to get their ass in real trouble somewhere down the line. And I hope people timestamp this, and we'll see how it plays out. But
you mean manipulation or rumors, you know, lying about shit, or what do you mean by foul play?
I think some people broke the law with some people, and I think they are going to get themselves in real trouble. And I think we'll see how it plays out. But you know, I have an inordinate amount of fans and I have an inordinate amount of detractors. But what people like at the end of the day, most people, is fair play. You should win fair and square. You should lose fair and square. And when guys tap into shit and they do shit that they shouldn't do to manipulate the price of a stock, some people get pissed off and send me stuff. So I have some stuff that should make the skeptics very uncomfortable. And I know who you guys are. And enjoy it while it lasts. But if the GSR deal closes, and that's a but and that's an if, and they sell the retail division, that's a but and an if, you know, I think it's a huge stock. But this concept that death spiral or GSR and Nissan and GSR, people dribbling up stuff from July 1, pretending it's fresh news on August 10th. It's just bullshit. You know, it's just bullshit. It's high school crap. And this is a big boy game. And this is a belts and suspender business. And you know, if people have nothing to do but tell stories and do stuff and retweet garbage and make up this and make up that, great. You know, knock yourself out, guys. Knock yourself out. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I don't know how, you know, people call me. I don't know what to say. I really like the stock. I own the stock, and I'm in the STO. And if I'm right, it's going to be great. And if I'm wrong, I've been wrong before. And, you know, I used to have a radio show, Facts from the Other Side of the Tracks, where I used to rail on Learn Out and House Speed weekly, and they ran the stock from 45, I think, to 108. And I used to apologize to people weekly that I'm sorry if you listen to me that you've either lost money being short or you sold the stock and it's gone up and you could have made more. I felt literally sick to my stomach. But then when it went to zero, I said, hey, you know, this isn't a straight line business and stuff happens and you have to be patient, and you either have conviction and you're in a conviction trade or you just don't. And you know what? This isn't a pump and dump. You know, I donated shares to Roddy Boyd back in December because I got a tax break, and B, the guy does awesome work and everyone says how awesome he does, but no one gives him any fucking money. So I gave him 3 years worth of funding so the guy can stay in business doing what he does. You know, there's guys out there listening to this. They're worth billions. They can make a ton of money. You know, people, dig in your pocket and donate to Roddy Boyd. So I donate my 5,000 shares of Overstock to Roddy Boyd, and all I get for this is shit, right? All I get is abused, right? It's a payoff. It's a this. It's that. I mean, shit, I can't even donate money to a legitimate charity and not take shit, right? So it's like, you know what? The proof will be in the pudding. Truth will out. I'm going to speak truth to power on the skeptics and what some of these skullduggery motherfuckers have done in Overstock in the past week, and we'll see what happens. But I like it, Chris. I really do. I really like it.
All right. Well, that I have one more question here. I made a list of fucking things I wanted to ask you. So I guess the last question, and this is, you know, do with this what you would like. What do you say to allegations that Patrick Byrne first helped you go after Wayfair, and that you know, you were short Wayfair with Byrne's help?
You know, you're going to have an exclusive on this one. That is 100% false. The guy who gave me the Wayfair idea was another former arch enemy. You ready for the drum roll here? Irwin Jacobs. Irwin Jacobs of Minneapolis fame, where Irwin and I tussled over Aramisoft, which was an SEC fraud, and Conseco, which went out of business. Irwin's in the liquidation business, and my son and I went to see Southside Johnny in Minneapolis a couple of years ago, and Irwin told me I should look into Wayfair as a short. He says it's a complete piece of shit. And he was telling me they have so many returns and so many closeouts that he won't take any more at even 5 cents on the dollar. That he was offered at one time 19 semi truckloads filled with their returns, and he wouldn't take them. That's what initially got me interested in Wayfair. And then when I did the work on Wayfair, you know, I saw that Byrne was actually, you know, mentioning them in his conference calls, and it was through calling Patrick on Wayfair and talking to him on Wayfair that I got interested in Overstock. So my fascination with Wayfair was not from Patrick as a famous ex-con and felon and criminal would say, right? It was through Irwin Jacobs. So again, I don't respond to lowlifes. I won't give them the stage because they don't even deserve to carry my dirty underwear. But I will, you know, when asked straight up, give a straight up answer. So the genesis of the Wayfair was Irwin Jacobs. You have the exclusive on that one.
Okay, I don't even know where that allegation came from or what the fuck it means, and I could really care less, to be honest with you. But
I'll tell you this: this Wayfair is a nasty short. I mean, I shorted the thing because of Irwin in the high 30s, and I think I covered it in the mid 40s. And just say, I can't figure this thing out, and I should have gone long it, but instead I've been long overstock, so it's been quite a ride.
Well, look, I mean, I just want to address something too before we move on, and that's numerous tweets and other engagements that I've gotten about overstock as well, including one that I just got about a half hour ago where somebody said, oh, you know, I forget what it said something like you're touting overstock. Hang on, let me just read it real quick, and sorry to burden you with this. Here it is. Bad call, overstock has plummeted from 46 to 32 and changed since Raven touted. Hope no one added much. And I just want to say to that, and this doesn't involve you at all, Mark, just number one, I didn't tout it. The quote that she cites is where I said I added because I believe the stock should be worth $70 at a bare minimum. And my guess was that GSR was investing at this valuation because they think it's worth more than that. So number one, that's not touting. That's just my opinion. That's what I'm doing. I'm not asking anybody to go out and do anything that I'm doing. And I never do that. And I've never done that. And I never will do it. I've always just put out there either what I've been doing, and, you know, somebody else asked me about it, and they said, well, what's your cost basis? And I said, I started buying it in the 60s. And what does that mean? It means, all told, I'm definitely underwater on it. So, you know, I don't have any issues admitting something like that, and I don't have any issues talking about losers because I've had a ton of them, and I'll talk to anybody about any losing investment that I've had. Because to me, it's, you know, it actually gives gives the listener or the reader or whoever it is more of an indication to not follow what it is that I'm doing, and, you know, to know that this is my research, it's my opinion, and that's it. I'm not advising anybody. I'm not running anybody else's money. You know, when I take losses in my own money, and that's the first thing I wanted to say. The second thing that I wanted to say was, you know, I've also been accused over the last couple of days, and trust me, I can't imagine what it's been like for you, but I've gotten emails and texts and shit about overstock. You know, what do you know what's going on? What's up with this? What's up with that? Blah, 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 blah. And also I've had people that have alleged, oh, I'm only in it because Mark Cahotas is in it. Because also I was critical of MDXG, which I guess we'll talk about next. But, and yes, that was based on a lot of the work and a lot of the facts and objective evidence that you had provided and that you had made public. But you're not the first person I heard my medics from. You're not, you know, I was hearing about my medics years ago from other people. Okay. So that doesn't have anything to do with Mark Cahotas, despite the fact that I think that you've done good work there. And the second thing I'll say about overstock is I did hear about the idea from you. And you are somebody who, when you say something, I think to myself, huh, should I take a look at that? And should I vet it for myself? Should I investigate it myself? Just as I do most of the time when short sellers that are well known come out and go long a name especially, but also when they go short. To me, you know, a lot of the short sellers I know are a little bit sharper, I think, than most investors, just my opinion. And so, yes, I looked at it afterwards, and I was in New York City, and as I said on Twitter months ago when the stock was at 60, I spoke to somebody who works on a securities lending desk who was showing me the software that's being used for securities lending, and it's fucking archaic. It looks like it's from the 70s. It's like green screen terminal style, and the only thing that this person, who I did not bring up overstock to at all, I did not say one word about it. The only thing this person kept saying was, I can't wait to see what T0 does. Maybe T0 can fix this. Maybe T0 can fix that. You know, guys in my department talk about T0. I hear the name T0. And that came up unprovoked. Okay. So then from there, I went back because the last thing I wanted to do was get involved in this shit show that's going on with overstock. You know, I know you guys all have this age old beef with Byrne and each other and all this shit. And to be honest with you, I like you as a person, but I don't give a fuck about any of this personal stuff. And so that is what turned me on to the investment. And from there, I've had a couple of questions. I've bounced off you. I've also asked other people, namely some of the critics and some of the skeptics, questions about it as well. Because what I like to do is find the best bull case and the best bear case, and I like to put them both in my head, and I like to come out with the conclusion that is my own. So this is not a Mark Cahotas worshiping trade. I think it's nonsense, and I think that's bullshit, and I just wanted to say that. Okay, having said that...
Well, you make some interesting points, and I said this to a pal earlier. that, you know, Byrne is a disruptor in a big way. He's going to disrupt security lending. He's going to disrupt token. He's going to disrupt DLR. He's disrupting things. And when you're a disruptor, you make a lot of enemies. You know, I'm a disruptor and I have way too many enemies. But that's part of pushing things, and that's part of being able to make a difference. I mean, in my life, I'm most proud to be a dad. I'm second most proud to try to be a good husband. I'm third most proud is I put a lot of motherfuckers in prison, and I've saved the system probably tens of billions of dollars through exposing a bunch of just mishigosh over the years. And I think that's really good. And when people want to criticize me, that's fine. You know, knock yourselves out. But what the hell have you ever done, right? You know, you pick on people, you know, you want to knock stuff down, you're insanely jealous, this, that, and the other. But before, you know, you want to pick on me for exposing some of these frauds and these evildoers, just think, what have you ever done in your life? Because it's not easy doing what I do. And no one pays me to do what I do. And I'm my own guy. And you know, before, you know, you want to make shit up about me or hate me or sue me or threaten me or send the FBI out to tell me to quit tweeting or get the ASC to try to shut me up. I mean, think of what exactly you've done in your life to make a difference. I just want to leave you with that. So before we get into my medics, as many of you know, the ASC wants to shut me up on Badger Daylight and has filed a motion in Calgary, and I couldn't make it there tomorrow, but I filed an affidavit. But one thing I want to read without comment, which is a submission, because they don't like me talking about dumping, but this is an exhibit in a public court filing, Mr. Quoth, and I'll read. As a former operator for Badger Daylighting in California, there were multiple times where the places we were dumping were definitely questionable and could be considered illegal. One instance was early 2014, and the job was in the city of Benicia. Myself and another employee were digging a hole for the footing on a roadside billboard. After the job was complete, the customer requested that we go down the road on a small side street next to a small creek and dump the material alongside the road. He said that he had the permission of the landowner and that was fine. We called our supervisor, and because the customer didn't want to pay for disposal, the supervisor approved us to dump where the customer indicated. In addition to this instance, tanks were set up in one of our yards in late 2015 to dump in. That did not have containment under or around them, and they were not lined. We would dump in them, and the material might sit in them for days, weeks, or even months before the material was then sucked back and transported to a disposal facility. There were numerous instances of the material having a sheen on it, so it was obvious that there was at least some oil, gas, diesel, and or other hydrocarbon in the material and water. This was all encouraged and approved by the VP of Operations, Tim Reiber, and even CEO Tor Wilson before he retired. In numerous cases, we even released loads of very fluid material directly onto the ground so as to increase profit by not having to pay for disposal, even if the customer was charged. I also heard stories from some of my other coworkers who had gone out of state in early 2014 to Colorado and North Dakota. That said, it was very common in those places to simply bring the loads back to the local Badger yard and simply dump it on the ground in the yard. One guy told me that he went to oil fields in North Dakota and that the Badger yard was just a huge dirt field with an office trailer set up on it, and that they just dumped out in the yard and cleaned out their trucks, and that everyone did it there. Being that the work was being done in the oil fields, it is pretty likely, as in almost guaranteed, that the material at a minimum was contaminated and most likely hazardous, and dumping the material at the yard away from the job site or excavation site had the potential to contaminate previously clean land. So, a note to the Alberta Security Commission. You cannot, you will not, and you won't shut me up. So help you God. So you can have, do whatever you wish to do tomorrow. I've retained a lawyer in Calgary through my lawyer in Toronto, from my lawyer in California, to pursue this matter, and Badger will be exposed. That I promise you. So that's a public service announcement to anyone involved in Badger, Chris. So
thank you. Question. I don't know fuck all about that, but let's, although I might do some reading now. So let's talk quickly about my medics, if you'd like, before we call it. I saw today, and I was traveling today, so maybe you can fill me in, but I saw today a report that claimed that some insurers were no longer reimbursing for their products. Is that accurate? Is that what was reported?
Yeah, it was reported in the Wall Street Journal, which I guess is considered mainstream media. Gretchen Morgenson and Charlie Grant reported that Blue Cross Blue Shield has stopped reimbursing for MyMedics' AmnioFix injectable, which is a dangerous, unapproved drug, which MyMedics sells like hotcakes, which is a huge percentage of their profit, cash flow, and a big percentage of their revenues. Although we don't know, because they can't report revenue, earnings, cash, shares, or anything, and have said that their financials back to 2012 can't be relied upon. But what makes me really, really, really proud of this today is that on my website, petiteparkerthebarker.com, I kept calling out and pointing out to Blue Cross Blue Shield that MyMedics was trick-fucking, decoding, and running reimbursement through Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I urge Blue Cross Blue Shield not to or to stop covering this product. And I showed how MyMedics was trick-fucking them on the coding. And I've also urged Blue Cross Blue Shield to audit MyMedics and callbacks on where Blue Cross Blue Shield, through taxpayer or provider-paid money, was ripped off. So hopefully they pursue the audit and the clawback, but at least, again, you know, all may hate me, which is totally fine, but I'm saving Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas, Illinois, whoever, a lot of money by exposing MyMedics for what they do and what they are. And I can't change healthcare. I can't save the system. I can't do that much, but at least, Blue Cross Blue Shield will not be ripped off by MyMedics in terms of AmnioFix. So that made me very happy. And, you know, again, I did not find this MyMedics fight. I was called into it by Parker Petit, who, by the way, has to sell his house, I think, to make tax obligations in Florida. But that using your political influence to get two FBI guys to come by my house to tell me to quit tweeting was just rich. And, you know, it was December 1st, and my buddy who has pancreatic cancer, I think it was the second to last time he was up here, we were having a great day. We were laughing. And this guy, his name is Billy Buckingham. Him and I go back, I don't know. I mean, we go back to the late 80s. I mean, sort of like when we had little kids. And, I'm having a nice, peaceful lunch with him. You know, he has pancreatic cancer, and I get my day interrupted by the fucking FBI telling me to quit tweeting. And when I talked to him the other day, you know, which was quite sad, you know, I said that, that FBI day, you know, it's something we'll never forget. So, you know, part of this, MyMedics is they can't shut me up. I'm going to show them. I'm going to expose them. I'm going to drag their dicks through the dirt. And part of it is I'm playing for my pal Billy, you know, who sadly won't see this thing to the finish line, but man, I can't stand those guys. And I'm just, and it's nonstop. So MyMedics is a massive insurance fraud, ripping off people. They channel stuff, revenue recognition issues. They have new management in there, Mr. Coles of Alvarez and Marsal. Problem with him is he's just overseeing a bunch of guys doing the exact same stuff that the prior management was doing. And by all indications, Parker Petit, that 5 foot midget, he's still running the place. So I've urged Coles through conversation and email, you know, to knock it off, clean the place up, come clean, and, you know, just stop already. I mean, this covering up nonsense to keep games going just really needs to stop. And how this stock trades, and yet alone trades at a 400 and some odd million market cap. I mean, yesterday they filed a NT10Q, right? They can't file their financials, and nor will they be able to. Most companies give out some form of number, Chris, like revenue is above a year ago or below a year ago or this range or cash, whatever. They just filed a blank piece of paper. Like, we are not going to be able to come with numbers. We're going to have to restate. Thank you. Yet, that day they said, we still want to be listed on NASDAQ. We're still going to submit our plan on September 13th. And guys, if you can't file your numbers and don't even have a number, you don't deserve to trade. Because what are people buying and selling the stock off of? When they tell you your numbers can't be relied upon and we don't know what the numbers are, you shouldn't have a stock. You should just work on completing your homework. And if you have anything, then worry about being a stock. Because the fact that every day this stock trades is a sure sign that the guys owning it will lose 99% of their money. 99% from here. So, you know, it's just a grind, and I keep going, but, you know, their various offices get visits by the FBI and the Postal Service inspectors and this, that, and the other on a daily basis, but the company doesn't seem fit to update investors on what's really going on. So I do, through PetiteParkerTheBarker.com and my Twitter, which is at AlderlaneEggs. And by posting on the website and things like that, I get, you know, some tremendous leads. They're not all good, and sometimes they don't lead to much, but some of them are pretty rich. And I think I'm getting very close in my metrics, very close.
So, Mark, I wanted to ask you one final question before we take off. And yeah. Again, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I do. My last question, and I'm trying to ask questions that objectively I think people that are fans of Mark Cohodes and people that don't like Mark Cohodes would objectively like the answer to. And the question I want to ask you to wrap up is, what do you say to people who you know, make allegations that your style on Twitter or your style in person is is ad hominem, is bullying, is I know that there was a piece written recently in Institutional Investor. I know on the podcast just now, you know, you've called Pete a midget, and you you've attacked him on his looks before, and also earlier, you know, you made that statement, I'm gonna kill him or I'm gonna rip their nuts off or whatever the fuck it was. So my question to you is, what do you say? Drag their dicks through the mud or something, I think is what you just said.
I said I'm gonna drag their dicks through the dirt.
Okay,
that's what I said.
So my question is, what do you say to people that are critical of the way that you deliver your message and might say that you brought the FBI visit upon yourself by some of the things that you said online, and the way that you get your message across is
you know, Chris, you know, that's an excellent question, and it deserves a really good answer. And I'm going to touch all the points, and I'm going to give you a really good answer.
Okay.
Number one is what I do is a lonely, lonely, lonely business, right? The herd and everyone is a natural enemy, from the companies to the holders, sure, to management, to the retail guy, to the hyper on Twitter, right?
Sure.
I break up people's parties, right? I break up the fraud. So that by design brings on a lot of hate. I'm also not someone to really be threatened or pushed around or bullied. And they try to bully me constantly. They threaten my son, who's disabled, every about 10 days. They say, who's going to take care of the kid when his father's either dead or in jail? People don't care how I'm threatened, and I'm threatened constantly. I don't bring it up. I don't get after people. I don't sue people. I can't react to or have my lawyer get after everyone who threatens me, because A, I'd have no money, and B, it's kind of a fool's errand because the trolls come up.
Right.
But it is constant. Constant. And it's without fail. So when I push back, when I do push back, because I am human, it gets a reaction. But I push back once when I take shit 110 times.
Hey, man, we have, look, I love having you on. It's great speaking to you. You know what the nice thing is I know that there'll be shit we will agree on and shit we won't agree on going forward and stuff, I'm sure, in the past, because I know I came to you with Herbalife stuff, and you weren't interested, and I'm sure at some point I said, oh, fuck, you know, I can't believe he's missing this. You know, I went to Andrew, too, about Herbalife years ago, and I said, man, you got to check this out. I mean, this just looks like a fucking bona fide. If they can't prove that this is a pyramid scheme, they can't do anything, you know. And you know what Andrew said to me? He said, it's just not going to happen. He said, the fucking government doesn't operate that way. And he said, Icon is just too strong and he's too smart. And, you know, he's going to get the best of Ackman. He has unlimited capital and unlimited resources. And at the time, I said, man, this motherfucker just doesn't get it. But the truth of the matter is, he did get it. He did get it. And that doesn't change the fact that I still, you know, despise the company, because he was absolutely right, just as I'm sure you were, to avoid it. So, look, I love that we can have civil discourse.
I thought I was right on Joseph Banks. I thought I was right on Green Mountain Coffee.
Oh, that one killed me.
I thought
Green Mountain fucking destroyed me.
Right. I thought I was right on Money Store. I thought I was right on Diamond Resorts. I mean, I'm not getting into a position if I don't think I'm right. But, you know, I know I just do my best. And sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. But, try to keep shot me, I will get you. But that's not a threat, Chris. That's kind of a promise.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. Will you come back on maybe in a couple months soon, and we can chat again?
A couple months when Overstock crosses 100 and the GSR deal's done, and right, and the Sterno boys are drinking it, lighting themselves on fire. Totally.
I'm sorry I missed you. Sorry I missed you this summer. I know you were in San Francisco when I was there.
I was looking for you, but you didn't make it.
So. I know. And maybe next year. And okay. Listen, man, stay in touch. And I really appreciate you coming on, man. It's great talking to you, as always.
Yeah, great talking. That was a lot of fun.
All right, Mark, take care. Goodbye. All right, that was the one, the only, Mark Cahotas. Man, we covered a lot of shit that I wasn't really sure we were going to cover. And hopefully that brings to light some of the million questions I've been fielding over the last day or two. I hope I did an okay job of trying to keep things objective with him and trying to not just, you know, quote unquote, worship him, as people say that I do. So I don't worship him. Like I said on the podcast, I don't fucking worship anybody. So with that being said, I carry my own water and that's it. I carry the water for Chris Irons, quote the Raven, and that's it for me alone. All right. And all of this other shit, the podcast and everything else, I like getting it out there. I like having a discussion. I like being able to talk to these people that I find interesting. And maybe next I will have some of the people from this podcast on my podcast to talk about this conversation, to maybe talk about themselves and say what they want to say, and we'll go from there. But for now, appreciate you guys very much for listening. And again, this episode brought to you by my Patreons. Really, really thankful for you guys. I appreciate you guys very much, and we will talk soon. Okay, peace.